All right, welcome to Course in Miracles. So tonight, we're going to investigate one of the metaphysics of A Course in Miracles. One of the big terms in A Course in Miracles that is essential to the understanding of how Jesus, how the author sees, understands our whole life, our individual lives, our realities. He's offering us a clue, and the word, the topic tonight, the focus is projection. You've seen that word in the book, projection. And you know that it's contrasted in the book, the other side of that coin, the correct use of that power is extension. And so whenever we look at projection, we can think of it paired with extension. And you know, the essence, of course, is that when something is extended, it remains connected to its source, fully, obviously connected. When it's projected, it's kind of, you know, topped out, and you're looking at the projection and not at the source, and it's not obvious that it's connected to the source. Like a movie is projected from the projector. There's no clue about the film or the bulb or all the things that are making the image in that analogy. It's the source is hidden. When it's extended, of course, the connection is obvious and the singularity of the event is maintained. So one way to look at what you've amazingly achieved with your creative power, one way to look at your separate existence that you've amazingly achieved and you're living it every day. It's got flavor. It's got urgency. It's got a substitute for love. It's got a substitute for sharing. It's got a substitute for joy. It's really amazing. You've done an amazing job here. One way to look at that is with the single word, projection. It sums up what's going on. It's one of the things I like about A Course in Miracles is its practicality. So many of spiritual and self-help books and things, they try to describe your perfect state. What would you be like if you were fully peaceful? What would you be like if you had full understanding? What would you be like if you rejoined God? Those are just beautiful words. But they're not very practical to somebody who's so addicted in separation and projection. That would be most of us. Yeah, all of us. It's not a problem. It's not a problem. It's not a sin. There's been no harm done. There can be no harm done. The only reason why we even focus on Course in Miracles at all is that in this dream of projection, in order to nail it, in order to really feel what it's like to be separate, we had to build a door and close it on love, on true joy, on true sharing, on awareness of source, on the entire idea of oneness. That we had to build a barrier there so that we could nail this dream, nail this illusion. It's not a problem, except now we're cutting out the very thing we were hoping to make here, the very thing we were hoping to reinvent, joy, love. So Course in Miracles is here to turn the dial back a bit, to undo. To undo. You don't have to practice being love. It's what you are in truth. What you must practice is removing the blocks to love. Those are the things that you now believe in. You are love, and there actually isn't a way to practice or to learn love. You can't do it. It wouldn't be love. It's a substitute for love. If you learn it, Or you can picture it or draw it or speak it or play it. It's the ego's version. It's a standard of some sort. It's like in the ego's favorite substitute for love is sacrifice. You know, if I sacrifice my time and my money and my chocolate for you, that must mean I love you. And I proved it. So forth. No, it's not true. It's not true. And you know it. That's why you're here. It's part of your heart. Still beats in time with God, because it is God. It is truth. It is true joy. Part of you is that, and you know it. And Course in Miracles reverberates with that part of you. So, reason why I like the book so much is because it doesn't waste time trying to paint a picture for you of heaven, of perfection, of what it would be like to go into a 72-hour mantra on love and somehow feel that. It's because it knows that you are love. They used to practice what you are. But what you must do, what you must learn to do.
Yeah, I'm just listening.
Oh, there she is. Is that you, Lorraine?
Yes. Sorry, I'll mute myself. Star 6, right?
Yep, Star 6. Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll get Julie, I'll give you the night off so you can just rest in bed. Julie usually helps me. She's my co-host, and she'll make sure people are muted and type in names and stuff. I'll just give her the night off tonight. So it's like a small group tonight. So, you getting the feel of this? Course in Miracles in one single word. How brilliant! In one single word, once you understand what he's saying, is the perfect description of your experience as a separate body. Projection. And if you look how projection works, you have an idea, you have an image. Lesson 30, I think it is. My thoughts are images I have made. He's going right at it in that lesson. That you have made, first you've made the world that you see, you know, the atomic matter, biologic matter, all the programming that goes into holding together, but you don't remember that and you cannot see that. You, the you who's listening to me that reads Course in Miracles and still has to breathe air, that you has successfully blocked out your awareness of having a hand in creating DNA, gravity, the whole dream. The details of the dream, the wonderful, fantastic details of the dream are gone. It was very important to do that so that you could become an active character in your own dream and really feel it. How's it working for you? You feeling separate? You live in it? Yeah. That was the whole idea. You done great. But, you know, for most of us, for me, I think I'm ready to go. I want to go back out and look at it from a distance. I want to go back out and see the whole. I really feel like I've got too far into the rabbit hole. I am respecting. It's a hell of a rabbit hole. It is beautiful. It's beautiful, all aspects of it. This is my Christ mind. The Holy Spirit translates for me even the horrible things that I see in the world, and I'll get it. I get it. You know that section called The Two Pictures, chapter 18. Beautifully describes how we make an ego, we project a frame, that's your body, and we put a frame around the idea of the ego. The ego needs to be separate so that it can gain, so that it can have an individual separate identity. And what better way than to put it in a body? All of this you have projected. A Course in Miracles allows us to trace back into mind this projection power. Watch my words now. Projection power. It's the same power as extension, but it's been used to, like drawing a cartoon. It's been used to make something that's not true. And you've invested a bunch of time in it. And this is the part of your mind I'm talking to. And I am the part of your mind that's talking. But hey, let's go home. Let's go home. I'm the Course in Miracles has done it. And I'm here to echo it back to you, saying, hey, let's go the other way. Let's go home. Let's retrace the same power that we're so invested in and so busy using. Even now, as I speak, you're translating my image. You know it's Andrew. I'm speaking of ACIM. You know what that means. That's because the past has informed everything you're doing as part of your projection. That's fine. We're going to use that same power that you're so drunk on to go back up the staircase that this idea of separation was designed to lead you down. And the Course in Miracles has given us a really wonderful handle to describe the experience of separation. What is it? You say, what happened? You say, where's God? You say, how could this be? You say, and imagine if it all could be brought down to one single word, projection. Let's just take a few minutes to sit with that idea before we dig in. It's pretty, you know, this can get pretty intellectual. So let's ground ourselves with this. With this wonderful gift that A Course in Miracles has given us, this word projection. Because, you know, once you digest this, as it is with all these other words, salvation and atonement and forgiveness, once you digest these things, this book opens up to be the light gift that it is. Well, so let's take 5 minutes and let's look into projection. Oh yeah, I got a bell. Call your mind forward now. Have your body come to attention to hold you still. I prefer anybody who's laying down for these meditations, you should sit up. It really helps to stack the bones vertically because this puts you in a proper orientation. Do you see? It puts you in a proper orientation where the body is serving the mind. You don't want the mind to find the most comfortable position for the body laying down. This can reverse things and allow you to go to sleep or allow you to go passive too easily. Stack the bones. Call the body to attention. You will find that this neutralizes the body if you do it right. Because, of course, there is only one master here and it should be your mind. See now what use you can make of the word projection. Can you receive this gift now that you've seen so many times in A Course in Miracles? Can you receive this pithy description that Jesus has sprinkled throughout the book that in itself is to understand the word would take more than the words I've spoken so far? But it's all over the book. It is a gift of understanding in a single word. What is projection to you? What is projection to you? If everything that you see, everything you can remember, everything you can remember, everything you can foresee might happen, everything you understand is happening now. If all of that is the projection, everything you hold to be true, everything you hold to be real here, everything you hold to be a fact here, all that wonderful science, all that proof, all those numbers you have that secure your identity, your address, your bank account, your license plate on your car. You have a license plate with your social security number. All that detail, that's all a projection. What's projecting it? We have a small group tonight. We're going to go meditate another minute because I'm going to ask you, what is projecting? What do you think is projecting all the things that you see and think and remember and know to be true here? I'm going to set it for another minute. And it's okay to say pass because this is a pretty tricky one. No need to waste a bunch of words, you know, trying or guessing. That's what we're here for. So that you can ask their personal questions and arrive at your truth, your own dharma. No need to guess. The book's going to be talking about it. But a lot of you have studied this for a lot of years. You might have an idea to share with the group and teach us. What is projecting all of this? Sundari, do you have some clue to teach us? What is doing the projecting?
Well, at this moment, and I've lived this in a very exaggerated form this last week and a half, but right now what I was seeing in the last few seconds was that projection is really the co-creative force of God, either riding on the steed of ego or riding on the steed of love. And
when it's riding on the steed of God, what do we call it?
Well, you said extension.
Yes.
And that's harder for me to...
Creation is the other word. Extension and creation are the same.
I don't know. Could I share an experience, or would you rather I didn't?
Well, try this for now, because we have a bunch of people to go through. Try to focus on answering the question to teach the group your understanding.
What I've learned about projection this last week and a half is that I am the manufacturer, and I can, and if I sit inside what I've manufactured, it's all I can see. And it blocks my view of everything and everyone and is the veil itself. And I feel lost within it. But what I learned is that if I step outside of it, I'm the one that made it, and I can shrink it to nothing and have it evaporate, and all of a sudden I'm automatically back in love.
Beautiful. When you say shrink it to nothing and evaporate, it reminds me of the F word in A Course in Miracles. Forgiveness. You let it go. Hanging on to something for all these years or some weeks or whatever, hanging on to this manufactured situation and letting it go is forgiveness.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what's doing the, what manufactured it? What makes all this seem so real? What's behind that? What's using the power that you described?
You're still asking me?
Yes.
Everybody.
You, Sundari.
Honestly, it feels like I am an instantaneous creator of my reality. And the experience of these weeks just manifest a ridiculous number of fears. Blah, 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 blah. And I couldn't figure out how to get out of it. But when someone assisted me in just stepping out of it, and
yes,
literally I visualized what I'd made shrinking to nothing.
Yes.
All of a sudden, my literal physical reality flipped and all these impossible things happened that corrected.
Can we say that there was a moment of clarity when the shift occurred, and we call that a miracle?
Yes.
A shift in perception. You finally were allowed. You were allowed to look at it differently, to step back out of the problem. Instead of being the victim who is so drawn and involved in your situation, something allowed you to step back and look at it.
And the other thing was, in the in-between there, when I knew I was so lost and really in a really deep pit, where I called a hotline to talk, that deep of a pit.
Oh, yeah.
And I kept saying, I'm willing to see this differently. Help me, help me.
Okay.
I mean, I had to ask, and I had to indicate my willingness.
Yes.
And that was a big part of my process.
So you did it. You had to work with you. It did not happen to you.
Right.
Sometimes in this world, situations change, and it appears that it just made it so easy because it happened to us. And then we take credit for it. Versus when in Course in Miracles, you have a shift in perception about the exact problem, and you understand as you described. You understand that you've been making, the pain was there, but you've been making the suffering. And that you can let go now because you understand. That's you. Good, good. Luann, can you tell us something about what's behind this projection? All of these things that we've been studying now, you and I, in that Thursday night for a couple of years now. And we've been talking and talking and talking about, you know, my phrase for the last couple of years is, the real problem is, that you know something with your heart and soul that's not true. And I have not got anybody arguing me with, I think you guys get it when I say that. And so what is it that knows something and can know that it's not true? Hey, Judy, welcome.
I didn't get very far with my meditation. Mm-hmm. The first thought that came to me was, I am the projected. What I think of as I, this person, is what's being projected. I didn't get any further than that. But what came, most of my life, whenever I felt like I was doing or thinking or being something that God wanted me to be, if I had my eyes closed, I would have a blue light right here.
Uh-huh.
So what came was the whole rest of the thing I was just fascinated with, or being with this blue light. And the blue light always, I always described it as God is approval. So it's like God there is just, is God there, God is there telling me I approve of what you're doing, of how you are.
What had the blue light? Certainly it wasn't the Luann that I have hugged back in March.
It doesn't feel like it was me as I am. As a human, I've never been able. What has a blue light? Well, if I think about that, which isn't a question you put into your little stuff, the only thing I can think is it's one of two things, unless they're one thing, and that is my mind or God, and they might be one thing.
Good, Luann. Good. As long as there is a something else, somewhere in your imagination or capacity that's not Luann Ellison. And there is. because it has a blue light on its forehead.
Yeah.
Good, good. Deborah, what can you shed some light on this? What's doing all this dreaming? And Judy, you have to start preparing yourself. You missed our meditation. So start preparing yourself. You have to kind of do a quick catch-up. And my question when I get to you in about 8.5 minutes is going to be, what's doing all this dreaming? What's behind? It's certainly not Judy, but there's something. It's showing Judy everything. What the heck? Right. Projection is our word tonight. So, Deborah, what can you tell us about projection? Who's doing it? What's doing it?
Well, I was picturing like a movie screen, and my ego brain is just, can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. And that ego side of me is just making up this whole movie, this whole story. And it seems like it's trying to navigate around these imagined fears.
Yeah.
And
navigate, yeah.
And it's really challenging for me to think about these two worlds.
Yep.
And what keeps coming back for me is, how do I keep doing this life, yes, and be a spiritual being, be as God created me?
Yes. The dilemma of enlightenment, as seen from one who is still heavily addicted in the form as identity, honestly now, this is what I love about where you phrase that, because everybody's got to deal with this, is how do I continue to be comfortable? I have to eat, I have to sleep, I have to take care of children, pets, my job, my house. I mean, I got to live tomorrow. I got to finish living today. How do I do that competently and be spiritually awake? Be a spiritual being. Very honest. Yes. It's only the ego that says that the two are incompatible. There is something that you will lose, though. Let's not sugarcoat it, Deborah, okay? Well, should we face it now? Everybody, you want to face this? All of you follow her dilemma? I mean, oh my God, isn't this the whole... Yeah, I know, Luann, we've talked about this. The whole dilemma is, I lose me. If I would become spiritually awake, that I would lose me. How do I be both light and deal with the darkness? It's a very honest question.
What I keep coming back to is you've said my happiness is not for sale. And just imagining being in that way.
Like you have been. You have been happy, haven't you? There have been times when you've actually shone with happiness like a freaking light bulb, right? A few times here and there, you felt the joy and the freedom. Maybe it was meditation. Maybe it was a little act of love when you helped somebody else and they said, wow, Deborah, thank you. You said, well, sure. It was easy. I wanted to do it. Those moments, you touched this lightness of being. And in that moment, the ego says, well, that's all fine and good, but you can't live that way. It's not enough power. This is kind of weak, and you get pushed around if you live that way, Deborah, says the ego. Well, you know, it's not like if you become awake, spiritually aware of what's really going on, there's nothing that says anything of value will be taken from you. It's in the book. And if you value your children, your job, your pets, your plants, your world, I'm telling you, this was a hell of a success. Look at the bridge I built. Wait, other hand. Look at the bridge I built. And my spare castle. I mean, it's great. It's wonderful. There's no sin there. There's no separation there. Remember, the whole separation thing is identity, not form. Form is neutral. The body, the whole body is nothing. It's neutral. Play with it as you may. It just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So here comes the crux. I'm just trying to stretch this out because what I have to say is only a couple of words. And I've learned that. Hello, Cecilia. Welcome. So that was Emily. Yeah, I put my glasses on. Hi, Emily. So what I'm about to say is relatively few words. So I'm just trying to get you in the room before I say these few words that are so powerful. It's a motivation for investing and trusting in your spiritual awakening so that you don't have the sense that you wouldn't be able to somehow participate and show up in your life and still do all the things that you feel, whether you like it or not, you're going to be doing. And I just appreciate Deborah bringing it up for us because this becomes a barrier. It becomes a block for you to take the next step that you're prepared to take for maybe years. You've been reading and studying and meditating and you've glimpsed it and held it in your hands, but you put it down to go back to work or to deal with your spouse or your children or yourself. So here it comes. I say it's only a couple of words, so I've tried to stretch it out as much as I can. Ready? When you take these steps for your own spiritual awakening, and you know they're in the book, they're laid out, and it's you who will take them, and you already know. When you do, it does have a cost. It does have a cost. There will be a change. In fact, there must be a change in order for you to actually take on spiritual awareness and Christ-mindedness, which you already are, but you've been busy denying as an ego. There is a cost. Ready? Here's the cost. The cost is, as you live your life from an awakened perspective, you will lose fear. Yep. And when the fear goes, this is the rub, see? When the fear goes, a couple of tactics that you use to navigate the world, like anger, like distributing guilt, like using judgment as a way to either have or don't have a conversation or vote for somebody, that goes too. So the world does become a different way to navigate, but you do it without fear.
Wow.
It's worth it. It's not something to be afraid of. It's a big difference. It's a big difference. And you don't get to have these handy tools that your ego's been teaching you to use your whole life. So a lot of people aren't ready to actually go to peace. That's what the whole book is about, right? Peace. Foundation for inner peace. Oh, choose peace. Choose once again, it says. The reason why there's so many lessons is because it realizes how addicted we are to doing things the ego way. That's what it was designed to do. So, like I said, I stretch it out as much as I can, but it's a very simple message that the book is all about, and it's a wonderful, wonderful news. There is a change. Tell you what, try it to go all the way with the next lesson that you do tomorrow morning, whatever. Try it. And if it doesn't work out the way you like, your misery will be instantly refunded. Yeah. Isn't that interesting, Deborah? You brought up such an important point. It's so important to understand what the veil is. When A Course in Miracles talks about the gap and the veil, it is because you're so accustomed to doing things in the way of the ego that you couldn't imagine what it would be like to operate without fear, without, you know, danger, Will Robinson. Not for the body. You can still have fear for the body, but now you recognize you're not the body, so it just doesn't have the same teeth. So peace now becomes your standard because there aren't things that threaten you in reality. You can still drive your car on the correct side of the road. You can actually do that without fear. Fear, of course, could be described as a motivator so you don't crash and everything. That's not why you do it, right? You don't have to use fear. You can pay your property taxes and do whatever difficult things you have to do to finish up a divorce or a marriage or, you know, sell something in time to pay your property taxes without fear. You could actually navigate this thing with peace. The ego doesn't know this. It's not compatible with the ego's, the way the ego's teaching. But what happens as you awaken is your ego starts to take a smaller and smaller role, and love takes a larger and larger role. And then you can enjoy the ride, even as the loss comes, and the loss will come. That's the script is written. But imagine taking your losses in peace instead of fear. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Really good. So, Jacqueline, tell me what's holding all this together.
Well, I did right from the beginning. Immediately, I wondered, okay, where's the source? That was the question. The source.
That's a girl. That's exactly right.
So, I just, one of the first things that occurred to me was the collective one, the collective mind. It's like we collectively created it, but we're really just one. So I had kind of touched into that for a moment to create this. And I sensed that if I could go completely back to the source, then this wouldn't exist. It wouldn't be. I don't know, just somehow it would just wouldn't be anymore. So that's kind of how far I got. I was wanting to really sense the source, really feel it, know where it was, you know. I mean, I understand the idea that my ego, my personality is projecting, but I wanted to go beyond that. And it also tied in with the dream I had about grieving my personality, grieving the loss of the death of my personality. And then last week, that this is a dream that I really want to wake up from, like when I'm dreaming and I'm trying to wake up in the night.
Got a girl.
So that all kind of tied in together.
Beautiful. Good. You put endpoints on your bridge. You put endpoints on it. One being the lost Jacqueline. Mm-hmm. And the other one being pure source. That would be, I like to say it this way. You know, when you're awareness and you're awakening, you can see it as small s self is the one in the dream. Jacqueline. I think you called her Jackie for a while.
Yeah, Jackie, I do.
Yeah. Jackie is out busy, you know, dreaming and getting the dent out of the car and getting the right flowers from return to Home Depot because they didn't grow right. She's busy with all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Then there's this Jacqueline entity. There's a higher entity that would have the say that you can no longer see, putting things together. But then you went all the way to source. And as the book says, God doesn't even know you exist. What? Where's the big supporting love from the God character with the long beard that's going to, you know, make everything right for me? But, you know, if you're serious in your spiritual progression in the Course in Miracles, you know God is not a personality. And of course, as you said, none of this would exist at source. I like how you framed it. And yet, Course describes you as a co-creator. And yet, this whole idea of your own participation, you being a child of God, and as the Course describes it, You are the dreamer of the dream. You know this, right? And you've got, I love your endpoints, because you say, well, I would like to wake up as being a character in my dream. That's chapter 27. I'm a character in my own dream. I think that's a little bogus. I'm ready to wake up. Good. Good. You're surrounding it. Nice. Emily, you have a clue what we're doing here? We're looking at, see if you can get a handle on what is it that's doing the dreaming. Certainly it's not you who's in the mirror, because, you know, you could barely, you know, make breakfast, much less make up a whole world and body. What do you think is doing the projecting?
I feel this sense of not surrendering to God's will, being a culprit in the projection, you know, that part of me that's just like resistant to surrendering.
Yes.
So it has to build something big to make it, to make me matter.
Judy, do you have a sense of what's doing the dreaming? What's going on here? Hang on, you're muted.
I'm not ready yet, and I apologize for being late.
No, no,
I'll get, I have to apologize. I'll get with it.
Yeah. You can never be as late as I can be late. I know how to be late. I'm very forgiving that way.
Thank you.
Jason, what's going on? Do you have some clue of what's doing the projecting?
No. I'm still back on, you had said a phrase that I then had to go and find the thing that I had remembered. This is A Course in Miracles, a required course, only the time you take it is voluntary. And so I thought, so my mind has been spooling on that, and I can't answer your projection.
That's just fine. Believe me. Yeah, this is a pretty advanced question. All right.
How about
you? Sure will. How about Jason Dilley?
Well, I'm totally confused by it all. I really am.
Fine. I have no problem with that. That's paid attention.
Some nights I might be more adamant, think that what I think is real is true. It might be, but I'm not, tonight I'm not.
All right, just fine. Thank you. No problem at all. Julie, you going to weigh in on this?
Yeah. Well, I also thought this was a difficult question, but...
You're not in Minnesota, are you? It's just that cold in Santa Cruz.
Oh, I've been cold all day. I'm such a wimp now. I'm from Minnesota, but you wouldn't know it. but it's a difficult question. I think what came to me is that the first thing that came to me was thought system, which is what the ego is. And then I said, well, what's powering the thought system? And we've talked here about there being just one power.
Good.
So, still trips me up, but I guess I would say that powering the projection is an extension of God that is lost in a separated thought system.
Not bad. I like it. Thank you. Very good. Mystery person with the iPad, you want to weigh in? It could be Carol. It could be Kenny, Bridget. No, I'm just going to put.
I'm going to pass. Carol's going to pass.
There she is. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
You bet. Good to hear your voice. Okay. Lorraine, you got some clue on what's doing this, doing all this fancy work? You there, Lorraine? I'll unmute you. Okay, Lorraine, you're on.
Thanks, Andrew.
You're welcome.
So, you know, when we were meditating on that word projection, I wasn't as much thinking about the what, but more the how and what I see. So it's almost like my eyes are projecting the entire world around me.
Okay, good.
That's what I kept thinking, yeah.
Good, good. Because that's an orientation to what is happening. You bet. That's critical. A Course in Miracles talks about it as you cannot understand an insane thought system from inside the system. You must step above the battleground. You must step outside of the thought system, if even only for a moment, in order to understand how crazy it is, how insane it is. Good, good, good.
But the what question I'm still pondering, I hope we expand on that. Like, where is that coming from?
Good, you bet. That's what we're talking about tonight. No problem at all. Good, good, good. Okay, everybody, jump to page 473. This wonderful, wonderful section that we have been deep diving on for this past couple weeks. 473. Everybody has a book with numbered paragraphs and pages? Does anybody need the chapters and such? Everybody's in the present.
Good book here. That's all right.
Oh, yeah. Do you have one of those other funky books?
I don't have the other one. No, that was up north.
Okay, so you're going to go to chapter 22, section 2.
Well, I don't have a book, so go ahead.
Oh, no book at all. Okay, very well. Got it. Check. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with paragraph 9 because it leads us into tonight's work on paragraph 10. And I will try not to interrupt Sundari, who's going to read paragraph 9 for us, because that's what we did last week. Sundari, yes.
Paragraph 9. Let us look closer at the whole illusion that what you made has power to enslave its maker. This is the same belief that caused the separation. It is the meaningless idea that thoughts can leave the thinker's mind, be different from it, and in opposition to it. If this were true, thoughts would not be the mind's extensions, but its enemies. And here we see again another form of the same fundamental illusion we have seen many times before. Only if it were possible the Son of God could leave his Father's mind, make himself different, and oppose his will, would it be possible that the self he made and all it made should be his master?
Oh, yeah. And Luann, when you're ready, would you read for us paragraph 10? Wait, you're muted. I can unmute you, maybe. Okay, Luann, you're going to have to touch your screen and unmute you. I can't do it from here.
I didn't have it on that I was muted. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Behold the great projection, but look on it with the decision that it must be healed, and not with fear. Nothing you made has any power over you unless you still would be apart from your Creator, and the will opposed to His. But only if you would believe His Son could be His enemy does it seem possible that what you made is yours. Mm-hmm. You would condemn His joy to misery and make Him differently. Or different, and all the misery you made has been your own. Are you not glad to learn it is not true? Is it not welcome news to hear not one of the illusions that you made replace the truth?
Well, how's that sound? This is spoken with authority and knowledge and patience that one day this will be your own understanding as if you wrote it yourself. Because you did. Part of your mind did write this for you. This is, the Course in Miracles is a big love letter to you. And you will one day read it this way. You'll say, oh my God, I remember writing this. I remember trying to ease myself to wake up. It's a very joyous thing. So Let's do it together. Behold the great projection. Look on it, but, right? Very important word, but, in Course in Miracles, it's not just a filler word. When A Course in Miracles says, but, it's Jesus saying, look, forget the pretty words. Here's what I want you to pay attention to, if you're ready. But, look on the great projection, which is everything you see now and hear now. Remember, everything you think is real, everything you know, everything your brain knows, the projection, everything your eyes can see, that. Look on that, this whole world, with the decision. Whoa, that's a powerful word, right? Decision? Decision means commitment of thought. Decision actually means that you would allow the miracle that we're learning in this book to be your truth. Look on it with the decision that it must be healed. Now, in those few words, it also says, look on this world aware that it is a sickness. Look on this world aware that it is not the truth. Look on this world aware that it is a drug, a harmful drug, just like heroin or, I don't know, what's the more harmful drugs? People use meth. Has a great little thrill with it, but it costs more than it's worth. So that should be healed. That use of a separation drug from love and from joy just to play with it, it's okay. It's kind of fun. No real harm is done, it turns out. But you are delaying joy. You're delaying love, what you really want. So your addiction to ego and identifying with a body, that addiction must be healed because it is a sickness. When the Course uses the word sickness, once you get this concept, it's sickness in the mind, right? We're not talking about sickness of the body with cancer and sciatica and what have you. Even though those things can be affected, that's not the focus of the book. The sickness is the separation concept that you really, 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 really know to be true. You're habitually stuck on it. You're addicted to this idea that you're a separate being. This must be healed. And that's all throughout the book. You'll start to see it one day, one year, you'll go through the book, and you'll say, what, this whole book is about sickness and healing. In another year, you'll go through the book, this whole book is about my brother, and actually being able to embrace my brother as equal and an extension of me. And one day, you'll go through the 1 year, you'll go through the book and say, oh my God, this whole thing is about allowing love to be in the foreground and fear to be in the background and then gone. All of these themes are in this book. There's a number of them. I don't have the number. I don't know. I haven't charted it out. One day perhaps I will. But they're all levels of study of A Course in Miracles. So read now the word healed. And I'll tell you, hold your finger on this page, okay? I want to take you back, way back to page 28. And well, we can go back to the miracle principles, but I won't because it'll be a little too distracting. Just go to page 28. I want to show you one of our toolbox items where he first throws out the gauntlet, so to speak, saying, you know, time for you to recognize that healing must occur and will occur, and I'll help you. Healing, huh? Go to page 28. And Deborah, when you get there, would you read for us, let's see, where do we want to pick up? I guess paragraph 18 with the italics, we'll just stick to that for now. This is one of our toolbox items, everybody. You're probably very familiar with it. It should be highlighted in your book and a go-to item. If you ever got a difficult situation and you don't know what you're going to do, it's scary or difficult or you're going to go on stage or something, and give it, that's where this was actually handed to Bill through Helen because he had a speech to give and he was really nervous. He wasn't sure what he was going to do. And Jesus says, oh, help the poor boy out. Give him this.
But it got sewn into Course in Miracles because it was so beautiful. So go ahead.
You can do much on behalf of your own healing and that of others if, in a situation calling for help, you think of it this way. I am here only to be truly helpful. I am here to represent him who sent me. I do not have to worry about what to say or what to do because he who sent me will direct me. I am content to be wherever he wishes, knowing he goes there with me. I will be healed as I let him teach me to heal.
So Jesus goes right into the philosophy of the whole book with that last sentence, which is waiting for you one day, maybe today, maybe already. When you see that sentence, you'll say, wow, this is a very, very loving, generous thing in my life. To a new depth. When you see the circle that is drawn by that last sentence. I will be healed as I, see the circle starting to draw in the air, as I let him, with capital letters, who is love and acknowledges love, and is part of my mind, teach me to heal. When I am able to reach out with truth, that's Holy Spirit's guidance, and heal, I will be healed. Do you see the circle? Do you see the beautiful circle of atonement? It's right there in that sentence. And it is what A Course in Miracles is delivering to your awareness. And it is your awakening. It's the work that will put you back in love. It's the work where you're still involved in the world, Deborah, you know, all the things that you would be busy doing. It's still there, but now it's done with this love awareness, with this unity awareness. Now, you somehow, right, you recognize things that you see for what they have in common rather than for what makes them different. That's enough of a shift, but that would take a miracle. But that's what happens. You could still recognize him. You could come back and live a whole other lifetime if you want. But you'll do it without fear. Mm. A lot of fun. Yeah. But that's what's going on right here. That's the healing we're talking about. The healing of the separation, the belief in separation. The healing of the addiction of the ego. The addiction of separation, the addiction of a separate identity. That's the healing we must do. Just to show you another depth of level of teaching that this book has just waiting for you to discover if you haven't already. Go all the way to the front to Miracle Principle 17. Short one, but wow, is it loaded. Whoa, is it loaded. It's on page 4. Right after the introduction, 20 or so pages into the book. Yeah. Deborah, are you going to read that one for us? Miracle Principle 17.
Here. Oh, Miracle Principle 7 or 17?
17.
Miracles transcend the body. They are sudden shifts into invisibility, away from the bodily level. That is why they heal. Can I read that again?
Yes. I mean, read it again because there's so much in there. I tell you, sometimes the book, that's why it's written down. So you can go back and study it and stare at it. But there's a lot there. And that's why we have to meet so we can kind of slow down and look right at it. So go ahead.
Miracles transcend the body. They are sudden shifts into invisibility, away from the bodily level. That is why they heal.
Oh, that's why they heal. Oh, I get it. No, maybe you do. These miracle principles, right? They're pretty pithy. He just writes it down because, you know, it's a placeholder. Everybody I speak to who makes it a couple of years into Course in Miracles tells me the same thing. I read those miracle principles and I thought, what kind of gibberish is this? And then they've done the workbook and the manual and they come back and go, wow, it was right here in the beginning. You know, some awakening you've had, you know, on lesson 156 or 167, you will come back and you'll look at this and go, wow, it was right here in one sentence. This is truly a gift. This is truly, truly a gift from a higher mind to us. And this is an example of it right here.
Isn't it also that particular 17 is the miracle definition that I feel describes how it feels when I have a miracle?
Great.
It's not, I don't have to think it. I don't have to think about it. It's a feeling.
It's a feeling, right? It's a beyond the bodily level. Deborah, read for us number 20.
When miracles reawaken the awareness that the spirit, not the body, is the altar of truth. This is the recognition that leads to the healing power of the miracle.
There's that healing word again. Healing what? There it is again. He started at the beginning because there's only one sickness to heal. And were it somehow spelled out clearer or more direct than this, the book would throw out the window by too many people. Yeah. But it's here. It's here waiting for you gently when you're ready. It's here. It's here. How about 29, Deborah?
This is my lucky evening.
Well, we're all here for you. I mean, didn't you know everybody here is already awakened and enlightened, and we're just waiting for you to kind of get on board?
Get on the program, Deborah.
Yeah, you know, so we're patient, though. We've all transcended time, so we'll wait as long as you need. But go ahead.
Thank you. Miracles praise God through you. They praise him by honoring his creations, affirming their perfection. They heal because they deny body identification and affirm spirit identification.
Whoa, it's that healing word again. Why do they heal? What? Why? What did you just read? What's the trick here that Jesus is trying to tell us way back on page 5 of what the healing involves? What? What is he telling us?
I am not a body.
Not a body. Sundari, what's he telling us?
Nothing unreal exists.
I keep hearing David Hoffmeister at this moment in one of the deepest lessons I got from him, where I was talking about something or other, and I said, my daughter. And he looked at me and he said, my? And it was so interesting because I got it, that every time I talk, I use the word my, I'm in my body identification. And so then for about a year, I practiced like the daughter, the son, the body, mm-hmm. the vehicle. Yep. And it's amazing what kind of shift it is to take away my.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
just
true.
That word. Just do it with that word. And it's like a whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. I like what Eckhart Tolle said in the New Earth. He says, this was 10 years ago. I read that book. I seen it 10 years ago. He said the word I is at once either the smallest concept you can hold or the greatest awareness you can have. Love it. So yeah, Deborah, that's the healing. A shift away from the bodily level. It's the whole body identification that the whole book is talking about. This is the healing, the rift that needs to be repaired. Is the idea that we actually are, in truth, a body that needs to eat and sleep and grow bones and shed some hair and some skin cells and eventually die. Maybe not. That course says definitely not. The Course says, in fact, it's sickness to think that that's true. Isn't it great news? It's supported throughout the entire book. You know, Deborah, read for us one more. Read for us 30.
By recognizing spirit, miracles adjust the levels of perception and show them in proper alignment. This places spirit at the center where it can communicate directly.
So that's to kind of answer your query about how could you live your life as an awakened being in an unawakened world. And we're talking about shifting the center, see? By, you know, recognizing, you know, that means to re-know, cognize, cognito, or some Latin, maybe Sundari knows the Latin, you know, that to re-know is where that word comes from. So by recognizing what's already true, spirit, miracles, change the changes in perception that would be your awakening, adjust the levels of perception. We'll spend a whole night on perception one of these days because it's just the same. It's another one of these big metaphysical words that helps you understand what's going on here. It adjusts the levels of perception and shows them in proper alignment instead of upside down where they are now. But the punchline is this alignment places spirit at the center where it can communicate directly. Well, there's chapter 15. Whoa! Leading you into what a holy relationship is. Wow, there it is in the beginning of the book. Yeah. Okay. All right, so then it'll touch on healing for you. Let's go back to page 473. Behold the great projection. But look on it with the decision that it must be healed and not with fear. Yeah. Nothing you made has any power over you. Unless you still would be apart from your creator and with a will opposed to your creator. And then if you want to hold that dream in place that you're apart from the source with a will different from the source, you can still suffer more. Have at it. The Course says, I'll be here waiting when you're tired enough to knock it off. Some of you are, for sure. Maybe all of us who read Course in Miracles. And maybe that's a qualification to even make it through this crazy book. But somehow you say, you know what? I think I've been lying to myself deeply, using the power of creation to lie to myself. I need help to undo this addiction. Yeah. For only if you would believe that God's son could be God's own enemy, does it seem possible that what you made is yours. You would condemn his joy to misery and make him different? No, you won't do. Yes, impossible. And all the misery that you made has been your own? Yes. Are you not glad to learn this is not true? Yes. Is it welcome news to hear that not one of the illusions that you made replaced the truth? Well, thank goodness that's so. You want to see where the book explodes, I think, in a little symphonic end with all the instruments playing. You know how music and the orchestra will come together and finish up one of these beautiful pieces with all the instruments just playing. Let's go. The Course does that on page 595, in my opinion. Hold your finger here. We're coming right back.
Crescendo.
Huh? A crescendo. Thank you. The crescendo. Course in Miracles does a crescendo. All the music, all the instruments that are playing at the same time here. page 595, paragraph 12. Jacqueline, would you read that for us when you get there?
This world is full of miracles. They stand in shining silence next to every dream of pain and suffering, of sin and guilt. They are the dream's alternative, the choice to be the dreamer rather than deny the active role in making up the dream. They are the glad effects of taking back the consequence of sickness to its cause. The body is released because the mind acknowledges, this is not done to me, but I am doing this. And thus the mind is free to make another choice instead. Beginning here, salvation will proceed to change the course of every step in the descent to separation until all the steps have been retraced, the ladder gone, and all the dreaming of the world undone.
Oh, isn't that it? Isn't this just all a celebration of what we're doing and what's going to happen and what a miracle is and where is a miracle and what does it do and what your part is in all of this and how what a personal decision it is waiting for you to make so that you can undo the steps into separation and all undone when you're done. Big symbol hit in the end. Then you're done. And all of this dream is gone. Isn't that beautiful? Reminds me of, let me see if I can find it real quick. You're the dreamer of the dream, right? It's right in there. What's doing the projection? You, the dreamer, having a dream. It's right there. What's going on? It's right there.
The problem I have with that.
Yes?
Just a few pages later, we have a whole section 4, dream roles.
Yes! It spends some serious time on using the whole dream analogy, yes. Mm-hmm. What's that, Luann?
The problem I have with that, and I know it's a problem, I know it's not real, but the problem is, we're back to who's the dreamer.
Yes.
If I'm the dreamer and everybody else is the dreamer also, of course we're all one dreaming. But I still don't know who the dreamer is. Like the dreamer.
Well, let me give you a clue. It's not the woman in the mirror.
Well, I know that part.
It's the one with the blue dot.
Oh, okay.
Remember, we just read Miracle Principle 17. It says it's a shift to invisibility. That's why the miracles heal, because it allows you to move your mind away from all the other people having dreams. That's the ego. The ego says there's a bunch of other people to even dream. And the ego tries to do some kind of analysis saying, well, somehow they're all having the same dream. And do I have to fix each one in order for me to be free? The ego does that.
So when I started off by saying I'm the projected...
Yes.
Everybody is the projected.
Yes.
Then I went to the blue dot, and the blue dot says, this is the dreamer. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Okay.
She's very busy dreaming, and for you, pay attention. She has to be asleep in order to dream. Yes? Okay.
So I have to wake up.
Yes. You must accept that you made a sleep. Yeah, it's one of the little miracles you will have. It's a miracle to understand what seems so real is in sleep. But it's one of the vectors of A Course in Miracles is the whole dreaming scenario. So then
what I have to do is find out what the blocks are to waking up.
You do. Yeah. Yep. Same with any addiction is you have to learn what does it mean to put the bottle down and to no longer drink your mouthwash. You're still an alcoholic if you're taking in the mouthwash like 3 times as much as this, you know.
There's nothing to say to me. Well, you have to say sugar, not alcohol.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. That's right. Yeah, keep finding you're licking the sugar in the back of the stamps a bit much and not even mailing anything. Come on.
Stamps have stickies on the back. You don't have to lick them anymore.
Oh, that's good. Well, all right. That makes sense.
A little thing on the envelope you have to continue to lick.
All right. Well, I'll make the stamp addiction go a little easier. Right. Now, look at manual page 30. Oh, Sundari, do you want to speak up?
Well, okay. It's funny. I keep thinking just ever since you've been reading the miracles, like I came long ago to the conclusion I didn't know how to operate this vehicle, that I get lost in it. Mm-hmm. And so my whole practice now, like I do a long meditation every day, and the whole thing is downloading my operating system and downloading. I actually go through into my eyes and nose and intestines and esophagus, downloading Holy Spirit as an operating system. And it's the only thing that makes sense to me at the moment. And then at the end of the meditation, I say, love me your solution, live me your agenda, make my day, because I don't know how to operate this.
Yeah, there's a ancient, goes way, way, way back, and the saying is, you're not my will, but thy will be done. And I like the positive way that Jesus printed out in another book called the Urantia book. He said, you know, it's better to say, I will that thy will be done. It's very positive that way. And it puts it in proper orientation, because you, after all, you are spirit. Yeah. Okay, go to manual page 32. So back of the book, all the way in the back. The top of the page says manual for teachers. The bottom of the page says 32. And Judy, you want to read for us?
Sure.
Paragraph 6.
Sure.
Now we can't see you, but your forehead.
I'm getting there.
All right.
I just had an abscess tooth pulled, so.
I talked to Carol about teeth.
Okay, 6. Oneness and sickness cannot coexist. God's teachers choose to look on dreams.
Can you read that first sentence again?
Sure.
Just for emphasis.
What's that?
Just for emphasis, read it again.
Okay.
You read it just fine.
Oneness and sickness cannot coexist.
Most fighting words for the ego, can't they?
Oh man, they're.
I didn't choose to say. I didn't choose an abscess tooth. I chose perfect teeth.
Yeah. Right.
Other than that sugar addiction when I was a kid.
God's teachers choose to look on dreams a while. It's a conscious choice, for they have learned that all choices are made consciously. I had to see who they was, but God's teachers are made consciously with full awareness of their consequences. The dream says otherwise, but who would put his faith in dreams once they're recognized for what they are? Awareness of dreaming is the real function of God's teachers. They watch the dream figures come and go, shift and change, suffer and die. Yet they are not deceived by what they see. They recognize that to behold a dream figure as sick and separate is no more real than to regard it as healthy and beautiful. Unity alone is not a thing of dreams. And is is this... God's teachers acknowledge as behind the dream, beyond all seeming and yet surely theirs.
Yet another big, heavy summary of Course Metaphysics. So, Emily, would you read that to Judy just so she can just feel it?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Hold on, Emily, you're muted. There you go.
Oneness, the whole paragraph?
Yes, please.
Oneness and sickness cannot coexist. God's teachers choose to look on dreams a while. It is a conscious choice, for they have learned that all choices are made consciously, with full awareness of their consequences. The dream says otherwise, but who would put his faith in dreams once they are recognized for what they are? Awareness of dreaming is the real function of God's teachers.
Wow, what a clue. There's your job description. Read that again for us. Yeah, thank you, Julie.
I underlined it.
That a girl.
Awareness of dreaming is the real function of God's teachers. They watch the dream figures come and go, shift and change, suffer and die, yet they are not deceived by what they see. They recognize that to behold a dream figure as sick and separate is no more real than to regard it as healthy and beautiful.
What?
Unity alone.
We don't get to
unity alone.
We don't get to idolize the healthy versions and the beautiful young children and all those innocent, beautiful bodies, you know, when everything's going right. We don't get to idolize that and hold that as a representation of God and truth. Well, Emily, read that sentence again for us. They recognize, teachers of God, recognize.
They recognize that to behold a dream figure as sick and separate is no more real than to regard it as healthy and beautiful.
You can't have the illusion of one without the illusion of the other.
Yes, an all or nothing game. Illusion is illusion.
Exactly.
That's Judy. That's right. And now you can enjoy both the sick and the healthy equally. Before it was judgment time.
Mm-hmm.
It was guilt time.
Yeah.
It was the story that, what's the story? Oh, he has cancer. Well, everything is for a reason, you know. Twisted spiritual ego spin on the world.
They recognize that to behold a dream figure as a jerk is no more real than to regard one that is a saint.
Beautiful. Thank you, Julie. That's great. Indeed. Okay, Emily, bring it home for us and finish that paragraph up. Own that. Own those last sentences.
I think she had a question, Sundari.
Sundari?
Yeah, I was confused by something. Oh. Is it true? Okay. I think I believe in a premise, and right now I don't know if it's worth believing in. I'm confused by that. Where I think of my beliefs as generating conditions for the upliftment of myself and all, you know, to look at some issue that needs to be looked at. Does that have any sense to it or not? I'm lost in whether I think it is something I believe, but I'm questioning it in the moment.
I think you would do well to take that into meditation and ask the Holy Spirit to give you guidance on whether this is going to bring you back to peace in the whole world. Because it's a slippery slope, what you've just described. And that slope is what I call the spiritual ego. That it really believes it can make the world a better place, and then the world will wake up. So for you, Sundari, for everybody, of course, here's a key little phrase. You got to take into meditation and ask yourself, Is it the ego, the world, that wakes up to spirit? Or is it the spirit that understands the ego. Very important. It's very important meditation.
Could you everybody say that again? Could you say that again? I'm sorry.
You bet. Take this into meditation and really play with it. Your Holy Spirit will of course guide you. But you must answer this honestly. You must answer this honestly for yourself. Is it the ego, the world, right? Ego and the world, same thing. Is it the world, the ego, that wakes up to truth? Or is it spirit that wakes up to the ego, to what the ego is, right? Does the ego learn the truth, or does the truth become aware of the ego and its untruth? Do you see? Very important. Both don't happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's the second, but I guess the thing that I like about it is when I ride that thought of the belief creating it, it takes me out of victimhood into owning my part in the co-creative process, which feels to me empowering rather than feeling powerless. And I'm sort of lost. I mean, I'll have to think about this more.
I'm glad you're lost, because you could spend lifetimes in that pursuit. You could spend a Mother Teresa lifetimes in that pursuit. And Mother Teresa died, as you know, I think you know, some pretty heavy questions.
Right, yes.
On her mind. Despite all of the wonderful saving that she did and all the love that she represents in the world, she died with a pretty heavy heart. Beware of that, my friend.
Thanks.
Good, good. Thank you for asking that. Something we haven't had a chance to go over, so it's great that you brought that up. Okay, Emily, bring us home. Paragraph 6, sentence 10.
Unity alone is not a thing of dreams, and it is this God's teachings, and it is this God's teachers acknowledge as behind the dream, beyond all seeming, and yet surely theirs.
And it is this unity God's teachers acknowledge as behind the dream. I asked you, what's behind the projection? You all had a sense there's something behind it, one level or another. There were different levels described, right? It's this that God's teachers acknowledge as behind the dream, beyond, one of my favorite spiritual words, beyond. Spiritual path words, awakening words is beyond. Beyond all seeming, and yet surely theirs. It's very cleverly worded. There's a couple levels of teaching in there. It's just,
can you define unity?
Oneness.
Okay.
Awareness of the truth of oneness is unity. It's the opposite of separation.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, real quick, we only have a few minutes left, so let's go back to 473 and do that paragraph justice before we close off the meeting. So now when we look at paragraph 10, we've got all sorts of training to understand this paragraph. Behold the great projection, but look on it with the decision that it must be healed. Of course, I'm going back to unity, aren't I? I'm healing the sickness, the only thing that needs to be healed, aren't I? Indeed. You want to go back to love, the presence of love, rather than the dream of separation where suffering exists. Oh yeah, I want to heal that. Nothing you made has any power over you unless you still would be apart from your Creator, which you can do. What? Oh, yeah. It's right there. It's just describing what's going on. You can, in your mind, dream of being apart from your creator, and which comes with the cost, the price of being apart from love with a capital L, joy with a capital J, happiness with a capital H. And it substitutes the lowercase versions of all of those. You can do that. Okay, now. You know what? We can read the next paragraph because it's kind of a restatement. So I think, Julie, it's your turn to read. Would you read for us paragraph 11 on page 473?
Yep. Only your thoughts have been impossible.
You can see how your is italicized there? Every once in a while we get a gift like that.
Sorry.
Punch it.
Yes, I will read you that. John would not have been proud just then.
That's right. Brother John.
Only your thoughts have been impossible. Salvation cannot be. It is impossible to look upon your Savior as your enemy and recognize him. Yet it is possible to recognize him for what he is. Sorry, if God would have it so. What God has given to your holy relationship is there. For what he gave the Holy Spirit to give to you, he gave. Would you not look upon the Savior that has been given you? And would you not exchange in gratitude the function of an executioner you gave him for the one he has in truth? Receive of him what God has given him for you, not what you tried to give yourself.
Okay, now this paragraph is where he's getting back into what the section is, the frame of this section is the special relationship. And the way we abuse our brother as being a enemy rather than a friend, as a judgment and jury and executioner rather than a teacher and one to be loved, right? So that's what this section is working on. Your brother's sinlessness is a section. It's really the first sentence that is the focus. It's your thoughts have been impossible. Not love, not your being. It's that you would own yourself as the dreamer of the dream. Somehow, some way, in your meditation, allow yourself to let go of what you see in the mirror. In fact, the mirror itself, and what the mirror is hanging on, and everything attached to the mirror. That would be the whole world. And the whole universe that holds the world in place, in space and time, that you would take just a moment to step back from that. Luann will have a blue dot on her forehead for some reason, and that's okay. Everybody step back some point, somehow, maybe even right now as I'm speaking, and feel the wonderful truth that you are an extension of God, which is what we would know as love. That is what you are. You are the love of God. You are the love of God. And this has been a dream of separation, and only your thoughts have been impossible here. But your heart has remained true because it is of love. And were you to drop the dream of separation, even for a moment entirely, you will feel, and what you would be afraid perhaps would be empty or a void, you will feel the fullness of your true identity. That's the holy instant, and this is waiting for you, as you felt before many times perhaps. Thank you, thank you. Amen. See you next week.
Great, great. Really great. Thank you.
Good to see everybody. Thanks for participating.
Thank you,
Andrew.
You're welcome. Thanks, Lorraine.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Jacqueline.
Bye.
The last thing you said, Andrew, was the only thing that seems true to me.
Good.
The only thing I know that's true.
That you know. That's right. It's becoming the known for you. It's not just an idea. You start to experience it. Yeah.
I guess my blocks are my blocks to remembering them.
Yeah, because just like an alcoholic, you have to remember not to go into the bar and take one more drink.
Yeah. Oh,
God. What? Whose idea was that? Yeah, same with the ego. It's never underestimate the habits of the ego.
It's why it's so important to stay awake, isn't it?
It's true. It's true. But, you know, like I say, it's like a teeter-totter. You know, the balance shifts with your vigilance, which you're learning to do, to catch the ego. Then you spend more time in peace, and you start to see the sameness in things rather than the differences. That changes your whole life.
Yeah, because I was thinking tonight, my brother is treating my daughter really badly right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's living with her, and he's not doing any of his things that he said he would do. And she's giving him a room for free.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so I was about ready. I told her, I said, you know, I'm getting so angry about this for how he's treating you that you better do something, because you don't want me to talk to him, so you better take care of yourself. But then I just, tonight, just before the class, I was sitting here and I was thinking, you know, if I thought of him as just wanting love, instead of attacking him, I could say, what do you think it would feel like if you got love? What would you need to feel like you were loved? And I think that would be a better way to answer the whole thing.
Yeah, if you go in it with anger, then he'll defend himself as usual.
As usual.
And then you get some kind of a fight that doesn't go anywhere, because neither one of you is being honest. You're both avoiding the actual situation. It's go back, go, as you say, go at it with you also wanting love to be there instead of the mistreatment to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And same for him. Invest in him. Invest in his call for love.
Page 365 and setting the goal. 366.
Beautiful.
Very helpful.
Yes. Yes.
Setting the girl in a goal in advance. Yeah.
Yes. Key practical approach before you deal with the difficult situation. Julie is pulling out. Read that section. It's so practical. Set the goal in advance and then go forward. Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you all. Take care.
Good night, Julie. Thanks, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.